Now entering the Royal Rumble, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, Part 1.
Was this the guy when we look through the spreadsheet and we're trying to like figure out like how long this project is going to take? Was this the guy where you were like, oh my God, this is going to be long? Was he the first marker of how difficult this was going to be?
Yeah. Yeah. When I saw how many, and then there's like a few, like, God, at least five that are like 25 minutes or more.
Right.
It definitely felt daunting. But I think we're doing it the right way, Aaron. I think we're treating Shawn Michaels as an entry in the Rumble pretty well, because we're splitting him into two batches. We're doing pre first retirement and then post comeback run, which it actually split up pretty nicely.
Yeah, it actually spread out completely evenly, which I was surprised.
Yes.
And it's funny, he becomes one of these guys later on who I think you kind of associate with the Rumble, but he ends up being in a lot of title matches at the Rumble.
Yes.
Like that's why he misses 97 and 98, right? Like he's almost like it's almost like the AJ Styles of well, I guess AJ Styles is the Shawn Michaels.
Yes.
It's probably a fair comparison to begin with.
Yeah, I think it works well. But at the end, he becomes more of a Rumble guy because he's in, you know, those like almost like six straight, basically. He just misses the one right toward the end. But
right. Well, no, he's there. Isn't he like JBL's slave in 2009?
Yeah, yeah. I just mean he misses the Rumble match. But
is it more acceptable to us that he is a slave or that Hercules is sold into slavery?
He's not really a slave. He's an employee.
Yeah, but
he's getting paid.
I guess
the whole storyline is that JBL's paying his debts, and he's working for him.
Do you think
Hercules was not paid?
Yeah, but was he given room and board in one of those residences?
Like he had like the pool house, like Will Smith on Fresh Prince.
You know, that's not that bad. It's probably not the worst. I mean, I guess he's used to Mount Olympus. It's probably not as. Not as lavish as Olympus, but it's probably a lavish place that DiBiase has.
Perhaps.
Listen, Shawn Michaels, we're going to deep dive this. We're going to break down all his performances like we do every single time on Now Entering the Royal Rumble.
Bane of my existence, yes.
The Bane, oh my God. Do you want to stop?
I do the toughest podcast I do with you, Aaron. Not going to lie.
That's tougher than TNA.
TNA and Rumble are my two toughest.
Really?
It's your fault.
Do you think the problem is, like, us? No! Oh, go on.
It could be. That's all I got.
This is anticlimactic. Now entering the Royal Rumble! Alright, so Michaels comes in 89. So had they just come back in late 88, right? Michaels and Jannetty?
Yeah, they had their little fake start in 87. They got fired immediately, and then they came back. I think it's like summer 88. I think everything gets warped because of the way the pay-per-views were back then, but everyone, oh yeah, well, they were Survivor Series, the first pay-per-view. They must have just debuted, but I think they came in a little bit earlier than that.
Right, and they're still wearing the Rock and Roll Express ripoff gear.
Yes, very much so. They have like the purple with like the tassels and all that.
Right. Yeah, it's just it's weird because I tend to remember the Rockers as being like kind of like wearing these like flashy colors, you know? And then these early ones, it's like a very base level tight with like a hip scarf or something to that extent.
Yeah, they get the purple, they do the yellow sometimes or a blue, but yes. And then they finally I think it's like 90, or even by late 89, they pick it up a little bit. Because I think SummerSlam, they have like the famous, the ones that are in the figures, like the green. That's kind of an infamous rocker color there, the neon green. I think they have a Survivor Series that year as well.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yes.
Yeah, the big figures now. You know the Rockers are like a huge, like, grail wrestling figure right now?
Of the new set or like the originals?
Mattel, of the new Mattel set.
Interesting.
It's actually like, because they made a series at the beginning of the 2010s called Legends, and they released them in a two-pack. Now, even open, you're looking at like 150 US for both of them. It's quite an absurd, like, quest to be on.
I do have the Hasbros still in the green.
People go crazy for the Hasbros now.
Yeah.
There's like a whole...
Mine are all banged up. I don't have any in the package, but...
Mine, I still have all my LJNs, but I, as a kid, I bit them. Like, they're all chewed up.
Yeah.
Like, you'd think a dog, but it was me. All right, Shawn Michaels in 1989 runs into this thing at number 9.
There's a lot of loud screams when he comes out, too. Like, he comes sprinting in, and there's a lot of talk about him being fresh. And Jesse says he's alone, though. No Marginetti right now. And right away, we get some good teases. He skins the cat. He goes in on Mr. Perfect and almost eliminates him. So he comes in kind of hot.
Yeah, right after Ron Bass, too. I don't know what his problem was, but like right after that fat cowboy, like just all over him, pounding his bald head. And yeah, you're right. Like, you can tell right away that this is the guy who's in the company for the women.
Yeah, well, I mean, can you blame the ladies for going crazy?
I guess not. He is a sexy boy.
He is a stud. He spends a lot of time with the hammer. But he's kind of in the background. He's just constantly battling. Not too much. Takes a lot of chops and dangles a lot. He also takes a really big back body drop, a wild one in the middle of the ring. Takes a lot of offense. He's kind of always getting beaten on whoever's around him.
Mm-hmm.
But he opens up his selling as the match goes on, too, and takes some bigger bumps. And then Marty comes in, and he picks things up a little bit. They work together, and they throw poor Ron Bass.
Yeah, it's a nice double drop kick, I will say. Would you say that these
I like that they did something different. Instead of just like knocking them out, I like that they did the drop kick.
Oh, me too. Would you say that they are tag team specialists?
Yeah, I think I would.
Yeah, I think too, you can see in this match early just how fluid he is. Like how well he moves around the ring. The guy is like smooth as butter in this match, I find.
Very smooth, whether it's a selling, his bumping, his teamwork with Jannetty, like just slinks around the ring pretty much. Just everything is very smooth and nice to watch. He gets a really nice clothesline spot on Butch, and then they do this like crazy vicious little scrape where they battle into the corner and they're really going at each other until Marty makes a save. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of little spots like that that I really enjoyed. He also almost gets eliminated on a Bad News Brown atomic drop, where he kind of flips over and he's struggling to hold on to the ropes. So like already he's doing a lot of these near eliminations.
Yeah. Yes, and he's and does them well. Like he does like the big demonstrative spots that'll increase as we go, but in here he's like really starts to open it up as he moves along through the match. He gets tied up with Arn, and that, you know, they kind of play at the Brainbuster Rocker stuff. They've been feuding through most of the late end of 88, and then Arn teams up of all people with Macho Man, the world champion, to eliminate Shawn, and it ends his night. And I thought it was a good showing. You know, he's on his ass a lot, but he's always selling hard and bumping. He hung with some of the big dogs. Mm-hmm. He never was like a threat, but it was still a strong outing for a one half of a fairly new tag team.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the elimination, too, where they kind of double elbow him, I think that could have looked really bad, but Michaels did it well.
Yeah, because it could have been one of those lame ones with, like, we're talking about Jake back in 96 or whatever, where they get hit, like, run across the fucking ring and fly over the top.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Unbelievably. But no, he does it well.
Yeah, no, he does it well. I think it was just a really fun, energetic showing from a guy that, like, again, 89, I remember when we talked about Mr. Perfect, we were surprised at, like, oh, wow, like, he's actually a really great part of this match, right? And I think Michaels is, too. He's in there for almost 15 minutes.
Yes.
Bouncing everywhere. Where are you at on presentation with Michaels here?
I mean, not much. I mean, he looks good, but I gave him a 2. Like, he's not ever presented as a real threat or anything, but he carries himself well.
Yeah, I'm at a 2 as well. And I'm at a 4 for work rate here.
No, me too. I thought his selling was great. That big back body drop, the double drop kick, the scrap with Butch in the corner of all things, and then the sell the back elbow. All of it was really good.
Yeah, that back body drop is so – the height on that is quite incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm a bit lower. I'm at a 2 in effectiveness.
I went 3. He's got the elimination in there of Bass, and then I thought he was effective helping put a lot of guys over. Like, that's part of these two. Like, he really sold a lot of offense while he made guys look good, made the elimination look good at the end. So right. I thought he was effective in his time in there.
So that gives him a total of 17 points, and that ties him with Jake Roberts from 1988 and Smash from 1990.
I'd have him above Smash. I don't know. I feel like I say that every time. Smash did have the Andre elimination.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, definitely below Jake in 88. I think Jake's really important part of that match.
Probably below Smash, actually.
Yeah, Smash is more important, ultimately. I think Michaels had maybe a better, like, in-ring performance.
Right.
But ultimately, I mean, I don't want to say it could have been anyone, because he did do some special things. But, you know, if you took him out of this match, it probably doesn't change the dynamic of the match at all.
I would agree. Yes, 100%.
Yeah. All right. So that lands Shawn Michaels 1989 as the 21st greatest Royal Rumble performance of all time. Now, the next year, so they're kind of hanging on. They got the stuff in 89 with, they fight the Rougeau brothers, right? They do they have their feud with the Brit. Does the Brain Buster feud extend into 89?
No, it's pretty much done by here, I think. Yes, and then they do spend the time with the Rougeaus for most of the year. I think that's actually pretty much almost all the era. They get the Twin Towers of Mania, which is a lot of fun, obviously.
Yeah.
And then, I guess late in the year, yeah. No, I think the bulk is Rougeau's. And then toward the end, I think they start that little tussle with the Powers of Pain into that really fun MSG match in January.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's probably the best Powers of Pain match of all time, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Confident in saying that, yeah.
So he's coming into this 1990 Royal Rumble, which is a stacked field, right?
Loaded.
Yeah. He comes in at 26.
And it's like, you think it'd be a great draw for him,
yeah, no.
But it's incredibly bad timing, because he literally comes in just when Warrior and Hogan were finishing clearing the ring so they could do their big showdown. So a real victim of circumstance,
yeah.
Exists solely as a body for Warrior to throw out. I mean, it could have been anybody in that spot, and it just happened to be him. So it kind of sucks for him.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, he did get the chance to hit Rick Martel once. He got in one punch, and then the Warrior grabbed him by the hair and threw him over Rick Martel.
And it does make you think, like, do you think the Rockers had slipped in the eyes of, like, the bookers and stuff at this point? Because they're not really doing a ton.
Do you think it's because maybe they've that at this point they've kind of decided to go back to the Hart Foundation?
Yeah, I think that might be part of it. I mean, I guess they were in the main event of Survivor Series, you know, on Warrior's team. So, but it just seems weird, like, that they treat Shawn this way. I mean, Marty doesn't do terribly much more. He's just because he's on the opposite end of the Rumble, where he just lasts like a minute. But yeah, I don't know. It just feels like the 90s is not like the best year for them. Because even the feud of Power and Glory later in the year, they're pretty dominated. So
right. Right. It's kind of a shame. That's one of those matches that would have been I wish we would have gotten a rematch of Power and Glory and the Rockers.
Yeah, we never really do. I mean, you kind of indirectly get it a Survivor Series, but...
Well, they get destroyed again.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they never got, like, their comeuppance on Power and Glory.
Yeah, and it's funny, because then Power and Glory just gets destroyed by the Legion of Doom in 91, right? Like...
Yes, yes. I mean, you could do a world where you... I mean, I wouldn't take away that opener at 7, really, but you could have done Rockers, Power and Glory there, I guess, and done LOD versus Haku and Barbarian. Like, that could have been cool.
Sure.
But...
Or, I mean, look, I think that... Or you could have done Rockers, Heart Foundation and make the show amazing.
Yeah, they just wanted to give the Nasties the titles, but...
Yeah. Yeah, but look...
Which is fine, because they had to get them to LOD, so...
Honestly, I think it's a miracle that we've talked about this 1990 run for this long, because yes. It really is just a throw. He just throws him over another
12
man.
Seconds.
Yeah, 12 seconds.
I win zeros across the board. You did not. Why is that?
No, because, okay, so number one, I felt that, like, when he did come out, he's clearly a major fan of the women still.
Right.
Right. And even when he comes out, the announcers do kind of pump him up. So I gave him a 1 on presentation. And I actually really like the elimination. Like, I mean, Warrior threw him over another man. And so that's, I mean, Michaels had to jump over Rick Martel, basically, right?
Right.
So I like the elimination. So I gave him a 1 in work rate for that.
Okay.
I mean, look, like, he's still finishing at the very bottom of this list. That gives him a total of 2. That ties him with Dino Bravo 1991.
Yes, you can easily put him above him.
Yeah, let's just do it.
All right, look, I'm going to bump it to a 1 for creativity for the bump. So this clearly puts him ahead of Dino Bravo.
Okay, but hold on. Then that ties him with – let me fix this. That ties him with Greg Valentine from 1994. And I'm quite happy to put him ahead of Greg Valentine from 1994.
Yes. Oh, my God. That Valentine was so fucking boring.
The 12-second performance is a better performance.
All day. I mean, that's our thing here on Noel's Bard and yeah. Our shows, right? We're fans sometimes of the shorter stuff. I will take 12 seconds of Shawn Michaels over that, whatever that fucking 20-minute odyssey was for Greg Valentine in 1994, where he literally accomplished absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And I loved that Rumble, and I was like so fucking bored to tears watching it.
Because when you're watching that Rumble, when you're just watching the Rumble, you're not watching him ever, right? Like you're watching everything else. Everything else is pretty good. I mean, Tenryu's being an idiot, but like you're watching all of it, and then when you have to focus in on his performance, it's like what. Why? What? Anyway, we already dealt with Greg Valentine. All right. So he skips 91. Instead, we get that great match with the Orient Express. And comes into 1992 white hot, I think, off the barbershop segment.
Oh, yeah. And it's really fresh because it had just – I mean, it was taped in, like, December, but it had just aired.
Right.
On, like, that weekend, I think, right before, right? So – it's was it that actual weekend or was it a week before?
I think it was a week before.
Yeah. But either way, it's extremely fresh. So this is really his first, like, this might be the first televised appearance of like his look.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm going to check real quick.
That's very possible.
Yeah, I feel like it might be the first time we actually see him like in this new gear on TV. I'm sure he did a couple house shows, but.
Right. And he comes in number 6. And he ends up being one of the bigger stars for the time that he's in this match. Because obviously 1992 is all about Ric Flair. But Shawn Michaels, I think, does a really great job throughout showing us what this guy could be as a single star. And right away, he comes in the ring and he's pulling Tito Santana off Flair. So we're setting up that Tito Santana-Shawn Michaels match for WrestleMania. And he saved Flair more than once from Tito Santana.
Yeah, so just to confirm, he had not been... Yeah, he was not on TV in this look that I can see.
Okay.
So I think this is it. Let's just gonna check challenge really quick. But...
And you can tell too that the heel turn's effective because when he comes out, he gets major heat.
Yes.
They're booing him out of the building.
So 112 was the barbershop.
Okay.
So it's the week before. And then just to close the book on that, it was the week before, and this is the first time we see him on TV in the gear. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big day. Like, the Rockers are done, and to your point, he gets a lot of heat when he comes out, and he's right after it.
Yeah, and like, he is so full of energy in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I, in fact, so much so that, I mean, I've watched the 92 Rumble a ton. It might be the match I've watched the most in my life, actually, even though it's an hour long. And I was still impressed watching him this time. Like, I mean, I always knew he was okay in it, but I didn't realize he was this good early on.
No, me neither. Like, it's funny because I do remember always thinking, like, wow, he was great right away. And then sometimes you watch, like, he has that kind of shaky 93 a little bit, and you're like, oh, maybe he just didn't figure it out. But no, 92, he was already putting it together, like, pretty quickly. You could tell he was over ready in many ways. You know, overcooked a little bit maybe in the role he was in. And just like, he probably could have pulled this off even like a year before. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But so by this point, he's more than ready to go out on his own. You know, he was driven and hungry for this shot, and he's showing it. And I think he knew like this was a golden opportunity to come out here and have the spotlight on him in this new role and like make a statement right away. as a heel. So he brings a lot of good energy. He goes right at Flair, right at Bulldog. Like, he's just bringing the fight to everyone. Mm-hmm. Then he pinballs for Bulldog. He almost gets thrown out. And Bulldog really beats the shit out of him. He spends a lot of time with him in there as well. Then he gets paired up with Tito. He's selling. He's bumping. And he always ensures, if you kind of watch him, he's always ensuring that he's the focal point of the action. Like, he kind of puts himself in position to always be focused on. His tights stand out. He's flying around. Like, he's on your screen in your face quite a bit. He does a lot of surveying and methodical stuff, too. But, you know, he's always flying around as well. And he survives some close calls in there, too.
Yeah, there's no moment where he's not interesting.
No.
Like, when he goes at Flair, they beat the shit out of each other. Like, it's it's a lot of punch, and it culminates with, like, that really nice crescent kick. And to your point about Davey, like, there's a great press slam into a clothesline that Davey hits him with. And then Davey goes to clothesline him out of the ring. Like, and he – the speed that he goes over that top rope with, I mean, that's got to be a very difficult difficult thing not to fall out of the ring with, like, with that speed.
Yeah, I mean – I think this match here may be, like, his best performance until, like, he really picks it back up in 94 again.
Yeah, I think that's a fair – well, I mean
– I mean, there may be a few things, like, I don't know, I guess the Brett ladder match and all that shit in the summer, but, like, his big pay-per-view matches between here and, like, WrestleMania 10 is, like, not much, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure on TV he had some good matches. I actually just – we'll be talking about it on – PTB soon. It's the March 92 house show. He fights Virgil. It was actually a pretty fun match. But yeah, he's like pin, like, this is like 95, 96 Shawn Michaels, like, bumping and pinballing around in this match. He's, like, really flying. And like you said, at breakneck pace, he's bouncing from Tito to Bulldog, working both of them, surviving tons of elimination attempts. He even tangles a Repo Man for a few minutes.
Yeah, Repo attacks him immediately.
Yes.
I don't know, what the, did he owe him some money? Like, is...
Well, the old Demolition Rockers feud in there.
I love, too, that Bobby picks up on it, and he's like, Michaels has been over the top rope 3 or 4 times already.
Yes, yes. Well, he's making sure he's noticed. Like, he is really flying around out there. It takes a shot by Tornado, a big pinball bump off the discus punch, but he dramatically hangs on. And again, just keeps catching all this screen time throughout all this. Sean's really battered now, too. Just getting mauled on the mat, catches some smoke from Boss Man. He almost gets dumped again.
How good is that uppercut by Boss Man?
Yes, he just smokes him.
Because he almost goes over the ropes on the uppercut.
yeah, he does. It's a wild shot. And again, just like 89, it could have been hokey looking for some guys, but he is so smooth and such a good seller that, you know, he takes that bump over and it's like, it's just clean. Like, it could have been goofy, but. And then you end up with him and Tito again. This time they kind of lumber over the top and they both fall out and you get the double elimination. And I thought that was well done because it sets up the Mania match indirectly. I don't think they actually use this to set that up. I think they kind of set it up independently, but it's a really nice showing. He had a lot of screen time, a ton of elimination attempts where he's showing off his athleticism, hanging on for dear life. He's bouncing around. He got a lot of shine. And I don't mind the way they eliminated him because he doesn't really get tossed. He just kind of tumbles over almost on his own. Mm-hmm. So I thought it made a strong showing. And I think you could see, like, Flair's like one of his idols. So it's like a dream match for him to go. And that's why he went so hard at him. So he kind of gets like a bunch of that stuff in here, too. And he just reminds me of like Mr. Perfect in his peak, just like the way he was pinballing and bouncing around. So I thought this was a really overlooked, great showing for Sean.
Yeah. And it really helps pad out that early part of this Rumble. Because, look, as amazing as this Royal Rumble is, some of the early action in it, it's there's not the most exciting guys in the ring, right? Like, you got Tito, you got Repo Man. I mean, Boss Man's a big star, but at this point, he's kind of second tier. Like the heavy hitters are coming out as of number 20, basically, right? And so I think he really helps this. We're going to talk about Flair when we get there, right? Obviously, it's his match. But I think he's a really great in a supporting role here. And he lasts almost 16 minutes. Too, which is not nothing. So he's in there a long while. I do think they didn't do the best job at presenting them, though. Like, I think it was fine, but I'm at a 3 for presentation.
Right. Yeah, I went with 3 as well.
Yeah. I'm much higher. I'm at a 6 on work rate, though. I loved his work here.
Yeah, I went 5. I thought he was a really impressive and really worked his ass off. I think it's really an overlooked performance for him.
Yeah. And effectiveness, I'm at a 3, simply because he didn't really end up doing too much effectively in the match, but I love the work rate of it.
Yeah, I went with the same exact score. He only gets a 1 elimination, but again, very effective in the way he made guys look good.
Yeah. So that ties him with Bret Hart from 1988 at 23
Fitting,
points.
Yes. Yeah. I'd put this above Bret. I know I hyped up Bret a lot. Sorry, Boar. I hyped up Bret a lot and as like the steward of that match, but like this was a way more fun performance to watch.
Well, yeah.
Which it's funny. It's kind of it explains both of them well, right? Like Bret's like the steady hand that guides the match and brings that veteran presence, and Shawn is like the flashier, you know, a high energy guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to put it, Boar, I wanted to put him, I wanted to put Bret first, but we talked about this, and I just can't win this argument, so there it is. But great showing, and a really fun showing. At 93, he's off, he's fighting, he fights Jannetty in 93, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep, he beats Jannetty. Sherry hits him with a shoe by accident.
Right, that's right. And then he pops back up in 94, and... I think this is a really sneaky, strong performance that I don't know if you look at this one. I don't know if this is something that pops out to you when you think.
When I think of it, I think of like a few things. So he had just come back in late 93 from his little hiatus. So and now he's like embroiled in the double IC title mat belt thing with Razor. So when I think of this night for Sean, I think of him trying to cost Razor the title against IRS. Mm-hmm. I think of him and Diesel during their little spot, and then just him making the finals. But I never like pieced together just how good his stretch is in the match. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Speaking of good, the black pants with red and white splotches.
Yes.
Excellent look for Shawn Michaels.
I feel like we should rank his pants at the end. In all these.
I got to remember them.
The later ones I don't remember as well, but I think I remember most. Like, so 89, he had the rocker purple.
It's the worst.
90, he had the classic neon green.
Yeah.
92, he's got the brand new white and blacks. Here he's got the black and red, like you said. And then
red we'll touch in 90, the red in 95 and black and blue, like mostly black with that blue in 96.
Yeah. So how would you rank them?
I think this one might be first.
Yeah.
This one, then the 96 one, then 92, 95, and then the two rockers.
Yeah. God, I like those 95 ones, though.
It's his classic look.
I
think you know what the problem with 95 is? Is that we saw him wear red all the time.
Mm.
Whereas the other ones, it was like, oh, this
is... Yeah, they're kind of special.
The special Shawn Michaels.
Mm.
First thing that... He comes in number 18. First thing that happens is he gets caught between Bob Holly and Bam Bam Bigelow.
And then he gets stalked by Diesel.
Yeah.
Who, like, backs him into the corner. I guess Sean's kind of feeling himself, and then they shake hands. But then, like, a moment later, they all gang up on Diesel, and Sean kind of gives him the final shove from behind.
Yeah.
So it was some good heel shit, but also smart to take out the dominant guy in the match.
Very smart. And he also comes out and gets the John Cena pop of, like, low boos but high-pitched screams.
Yes. Yep. And that was me, was one of them.
Booing or high-pitched screaming?
The high-pitched scream.
No, very good. Very good.
But I wasn't like...
He spends a lot of time in this match with Bob Holly, though.
Oh, so much time with Sparky. A lot of basic stuff with some teases. He almost picked right back up where he left off in 92 with all the great like near eliminations.
Yeah. Yeah. And
then he gets... Yeah.
He gets a near elimination off Mo, of all people.
Uh-huh.
That's how hard he's working. He's getting Mo over.
Yeah, he's crushing it. And speaking of crushing it, he gets ragged out by Crush, his old rival. Takes a hard kick to the ribs as part of it, too.
Yeah.
And then he works with Mabel against Tatanka, which is kind of cool. And he's kind of re-engaging some of these 93 feuds. Crush, Tatanka, like kind of his old rivals he's mixing it up with. A lot of time in the mat, takes a lot of offense. And then he takes a nice super kick by Mo, like you said. And then again, he's part of the big coalition to eliminate Mabel, another big threat. So he's working smartly here.
Yeah, he's working smartly. And I've noticed, too, that he's the guy in the match that everyone goes after to get cheers.
Yes.
Like, if you want to get cheered, it's like Honky Tonk Man in these earlier Rumbles or Danny Davis, right? If you want to get cheered, do a near elimination on Shawn Michaels. And I really like, he's got a great little sequence. He's got a great little sequence with Luger throughout this match. And what I noticed, yes. What I noticed too, is that he spends a lot of time working over Luger with his punches, and his punches are really crisp and good, which makes me kind of lament that later on his career, he started relying so heavily on chops.
Yeah. He switches it up. No, his punches always did look pretty strong. During his heel time, especially here. And he does feed Luger a lot during Lex's hot streak when he comes in. Takes a really nice clothesline. And I thought he was definitely a fulcrum in this match. Not the most focused on, but every time you see the mix, like, he's in the middle of it. And you feel like things are kind of revolving around him throughout the match. Like, just kind of a steadying force as things go on.
And I was going to say, DiBiase is supporting him the whole match on commentary.
Yes, yes.
He's putting over his stamina. He's like, you got to hand it to Michaels. Michaels has shown me something. And all Vince can say is, he's like an orangutan.
That's what I think of. Sean Luger and Crush have a stiff triangle battle. And right there is when DiBiase hypes up the stamina, talks about how long he's been in the ring. And Sean kind of stays away when Brett comes hobbling in as well. He's still kind of mainly dealing with Tatanka, Martel. He's kind of in his own back corner. It's like a like his bar stool or something. Kind of owns that little corner of the ring. It's guys keep coming to him. And then, of course, you get Marginetti coming in toward the end. They go right at it, which is a cool moment. The crowd was super into it. And Ted again credits Sean, says Marty's like super fresh and Sean's hanging in there right with him.
I hate that. I love that. I love that they just like go at each other with punches, but then they go to like super kick each other and Tenryu kind of stumbles drunkenly in the way.
Oh yeah, I know.
Fuck Tenryu. Fuck, get this guy out of here. And then who pulls Sean? Do you remember who pulls Shawn Michaels away from Marty Jannetty?
It was Sparky, right?
Bob fucking Holly. Yeah. I don't want to see this match anymore. I'm good.
They love going at each other. Sean does a nice job being worn down but firing up. It's a good blend. But yeah, he's getting mauled by Marty, and then, you know, Sparky comes in. But then he ends up dumping Sparky out. So that's good. And then he finally finds his way to Brett, and he almost eliminates him right as Sean hits his 25-minute mark. Then he goes back to Marty. He's dealing with Brett. He's kind of dealing with both of them. He's exhausted. He's crawling and gasping for air. And then he really claws at Marty in the corner, which has been a fun through line, and then he eventually yanks him out, so he gets the last laugh on his old partner.
Yeah, is that the end of the feud?
Well, no. I mean, they end up fighting again in 96 with George Sean Suttering, so not yet. And then we get the spot where Fatu crushes Tenryu in the corner and Sean with headbutts, and then Sean and Fatu have a big collision in the middle of the ring. So it's like a fun little stretch where he eats the big headbutt and then a big collision. Just really hard stuff down the stretch here.
Do you think it was odd seeing him team with Rick Martel to fight Tatanka?
Well, yeah, they've all had their problems. Tatanka Martel had issues. Sean and Martel had issues. Sean and Tatanka had issues. So
yeah,
it's a real Kelly Dillon Brenda deal.
I thought Brandon was involved in that too.
Brandon, Dylan, and Kelly. Yeah, I mean, they all had their issues.
I thought he did a really great job, because Diesel owns the early part of this match, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then once Diesel gets thrown out, I think he takes over the role of the main guy in the match.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, he's kind of the fulcrum of it. Even when he's not focused on, he's just kind of like the big boss of it. Like, he's running the show even when he's not. Like, you know he's going to pop back up in some span. And he makes the Final Four for the first time, which is a good spot for it. But it feels like he's on the cusp of that breakout. We'll see other guys do this too, where, like, they're just about to really hit the next level and they have him be a Final Four guy in a Rumble or something like that. So it's a cool moment for him. And this is, like, a harbinger of what's to come for him later this year. He dives at Brett, and they have a really fun sequence. He almost throws him out.
I love that jump on him when he just
it's so good.
Yeah, because it just shows the desperation of the match.
Yes,
right.
He knows like he's come this far and he's so close now.
Yeah, so he goes after the injured guy too, which is a great heel move.
Yep, and then the elimination is great too. Him and Fatu cross each other on a charge, and they both get thrown out. Brett and Luger whip them at each other. They fly by each other, and the other guy dumps them out. And he goes flying over the post, which looked great. Just a really strong showing. He spent a ton of time. He was always active. Had some good classic battles with the old foes. Some nice teases with the bumps. And he was a keystone at the back end of the match. He was on the cusp of elevation. And this definitely helped him get there.
Yeah. He's in there almost 30 minutes.
Yes.
29 minutes, 17 seconds. So, yeah, he's really holding this thing together. And I think, too, this is kind of the first year they started treating him as a serious threat in the match, which is why I went 5 for presentation.
Yeah, I went 5 as well. Yep, agreed. He's presented strongly as a threat. It makes the final 4. You know, I don't – like, they're probably not going to have a win for Yokozuna, but he's the third – guy that could win in the ring after Bret and Lex, like he's ahead of Fatu, so that's good. I mean, third best ranked guy toward the end.
Well, yeah, and when you look at that final four, it's only Fatu that looks out of place.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like if Yoko wasn't champion, it wouldn't have been that crazy to think Sean could win this match. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
If it was a guy more believable that he could fight at Mania.
No, like if Bret was champion.
Yeah, or Razor even, or something like that. Sure, you know what I mean? Like. There was no way they were going to do fucking Sean versus Yoko at Mania, so.
No. No. Yeah, so, and I believe, see, this is, I may need to reevaluate everything, but then I'd just be bumping everybody up, because I think that his work in this is just as good as 92.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I had it the same, and you had it the same, right? I had it as a 5.
No, I had it as a 6, yeah.
Yeah, no, he was great. I mean, he worked his ass off, and you could, like, after a very shaky 93 where the back end of it, he's like out of shape and stuff, like he comes back pretty quick and is back to himself. I mean, this sets him on the path to go into WrestleMania for one, you know, the first like really big match of his career. So
one of the greatest matches of all time.
Correct.
Yeah. And then so and I do think this was I think this is also the most effective he's been. So I went a 5 on effectiveness.
Yeah, I went a 5 as well. Has 4 eliminations, makes the final 4. Puts a lot of guys over it, throws out Diesel and Mabel, was, you know, a key part of those eliminations. So, yeah, I mean, it's a great showing. It's a forgotten showing, and it's cool that it happens right on the precipice of his breakout stardom.
Absolutely. And this showing that everyone kind of forgets about and no one really thinks. I think I was talking to Chad about it. Like, when we were making a case for Michaels being Mr. January on No Holds Barred.
Yes.
I remember Chad saying, like, well, what does he have? And I think I brought this up, and I just think it's just a forgotten match. But this forgotten match is now the 4th best Royal Rumble performance of all time with 31 points.
Yep.
Now,
and that's not going to stay for that long.
No.
With this other one still to come.
No, it will not. But before we leave 94, do you think that Sherry was upset with Sean because he punched Rick Martel in the face in this match?
I think she had moved on, honestly.
Yeah.
She was a secret on the phone by this point. Was she with Flair? I don't know. I guess she was about to be with Flair in WCW soon.
Is she marrying Colonel Robert Parker here?
That's not until 96.
Like, if she doesn't get blasted with that mirror, she never marries Robert Parker, right?
Correct. I think she might have... it's not long after that she's in ECW for a cup of coffee with Shane.
Okay. McMahon?
Yes, before he moved to WWF.
All right. So, 1995... special.
Why don't you take a break here, though, Aaron, before you get to 95? It's a big one. You want to quickly tell us some stuff about North Tail Connection?
I would love to. So, if you're into wrestling, if you're into pop culture, please give North South Connection podcast a chance on your listening.
Pina coladas.
Pina coladas, or Dancing in the Rain, or whatever that sign.
Getting caught in the rain.
Yeah. Or good night, Irene.
Not into yoga.
Listen, Mondays.
You're into champagne.
You know this song very well.
Making Love at Midnight in the Dunes of the Cape.
Are you aware of the comedy The Sweetest Thing?
We'll Plan Our Escape. It sounds familiar. I don't think I've seen it.
I feel like this is something, because you're a romantic comedy guy, right?
I do like my rom-coms.
Yeah, you should watch this one. It's with Christina Applegate and what's his name? The guy who played Thomas Jane. It's great.
Sandman.
Yeah, there's a whole... what's that song you were just singing? Margaritaville, was that it?
It's Escape, the Pina Colada song by Rupert Holmes.
Rupert Holmes. Look, Mondays, North South, you get this show. That runs in tandem with The Year That Was, which is quickly coming to an end as we count down the greatest years in WWE history on pay-per-view. Tuesdays, you're looking at the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast with Jake Williams. He brings on a guest every other week to talk about the Ruthless Aggressive era. Who's his latest guest, do you know?
Bob Colling of WrestlingRecaps.com.
Nice. They're going to take our trip down memory lane and talk about a time that we don't talk too much about, which is sad because there's a lot of great wrestling there. And I think that's probably, the more I think about it, that's probably the greatest roster they ever had. Professional wrestling wise, anyway.
Yeah. The only other era you could argue is maybe 01, like mid to late 01.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, it's almost,
I guess it's a lot of the same guys.
Yeah.
Same
era, yeah. I mean,
not quite though. It was like Austin's gone and stuff. And, you know, I mean, you could argue like 2018 is up there. You know what I mean? Like when you look at their actual roster of people.
Well, my whole thing on that is that I think now too, but all these modern things, I think they're the best athletes they've ever had, but not the best wrestlers.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Like in terms of psychology stuff. Anyway, Jake's breaking that down every second week on the Richly Aggressive podcast, and that runs in tandem with you, Jenny, and I still kicking it. TNA never dies.
We will survive.
I hope we're gonna survive because I'm gonna tell you, I watched something last night. The night before we recorded this, we recorded a TNA, and I got in the mood to watch TNA, so I turned on Victory Road 2004, their first pay-per-view.
Yes.
And then the Three Live Crew came out, and all their fucking skits and stuff, I was like, does it start on the weekly pay-per-views? So, I mean, guys, hang on, because we're in for a ride when we get
to we're closing in our next episode. Or most recent, I don't know. I'm trying to think of the timeline when this all hits, but either way, we're about to finish 02 and we're heading into 03 very soon. So
that's right. So things are changing there. It's a torture. It's torture for us, but hopefully it's pleasure for you. On Wednesdays, Justin Pratt and Tim Slomka, New Gen on a mission, going from the Survivor Series 1992 to the Survivor Series 1997, bookending with Brett and Sean. I love about this show is the minutiae they get into.
Yes.
Because it's not just the pay-per-views. They're talking superstars. They're talking Raw. And
yeah, I mean, I can confidently say, like, not too many podcasts have covered, like, superstars early 93. Like, that's, like, you know, that's, like, a really different time frame to be covering.
Yeah, and what's great, because, like, I tend to not be interested in podcasts if I haven't watched the thing, right?
Right.
But I don't feel that way at all when I listen to Justin and Tim.
Right? Oh, definitely not.
Like, I think it's a credit to them that they don't dwell on the show so much. It's more just to give you a context of what's happening. But I think that's the charm of the show, is that it's just such a great snapshot of that era. And it's a fun, ridiculous era. And the great thing about the TV is you get all the stupid characters that, like, never made it to pay-per-view, right? Like, I guess we'll get to talk about them at some point, but, like, Damian Demento, like, you're not hearing a lot of podcasts talking about him, right?
No, and it's, like, actually going to end up being a nice coda to PTB, you know, because they kind of picked up at the end of 92, and that's where, you know, Scott and I's run is going to get to with this new, you know, this original reboot we did, right? And it's similar, right? Because Scott and I have done all the MSGs, we see a lot of guys like that too that never made pay-per-view, so it's almost like a nice, you know, it'll pick up kind of where we left off and or eventually leave off, and, you know, it'll run right into that, so it's kind of cool.
And what we'll pick up from that is Chad and you doing Wrestling Warzone. Going to the Monday Night War era. You guys are chugging along midway through 1996 at this point, correct?
Yeah, it's an exciting time because, I mean, the NWO is now officially up and running. And it's like one of the things we're tracking is when does it become a big focal point of the show? Like right now, like it's still very early. We're only a couple weeks in. And like you still have like WCW guys fighting each other and stuff. Like, so I'm curious, like when does it all become about the NWO? So we're going to track that and see how things develop. And it's cool, you know, in the very early days, seeing each of the, when the big NWO things that everyone remembers start to pop up one by one, right? Like, when does the music start? When do the promotional consideration,
paid advertisements?
Yeah. Like, when does that start, right? When is the fourth guy for a show? Like, so, like, how does everything play out is really interesting to me in that era. So I'm super hyped. And we're also on the verge of international incidents in your house. So then we'll be headed towards SummerSlam 96. And WDF is getting interesting too. Still not the best, but it's better than, you know, late 95 into early 96. So it's a lot of fun. I mean, this chat I've been hacking away for a while. It takes a while to get through these shows when you're doing every weekly TV.
Of course. And especially when you're only presenting them bi-weekly, right?
Yes.
Because what? So. I mean, you're not quite finished a full year yet, right? But you've been doing it for like a year and a half.
Well, I mean, we actually started it on the PTV feed like years ago. We just didn't do them regularly, you know. But since North South, we've hit just about every other week. So yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, we started the second Nitro, which was in September 12th, I think, was the first one we did. So yeah, we're not even at a full year of time yet.
And you're about to get Psycho Sid, so I envy you. I mean, I guess I could go back.
Yes, he did debut on Raw already for us. His great when he shows up with Sean, Psycho Sid. And then the most recent edition we did is when he drives in the Crown Vic into the back and smashes into the barrels and attacks Camp Cornette. So
interesting enough,
start.
Isn't that how his WWF career ended, with a car crash?
Sadly, yes.
Yes. Yes. And then his in-ring career ended with a leg crash. All right. That runs in tandem. Now, when is this coming? You guys are doing ECW three-way dance, you, Jenny, and John D'Amato. It's on a bit of a hiatus, but you guys are coming back, right?
Yeah, just, you know, with the network stuff and like, we're just kind of waiting. And between scheduling and the network going down, we're just taking a little bit of break. But when we pick back up, we'll be right in early 96 where we left off. It's actually a good place to pause. Our last episode is Big Ass Extreme Bash, which is a really famous show, and that is where Cactus Jack has his final match with Mikey Whipwreck before going to WWF as Mankind. So it was kind of a cool place to take a break if we had to take one, because it's almost like a hard change, you know, with him leaving. He's been such a stalwart for us in the history of that show. But yeah, we started in February 94, so we've made a lot of progress.
Yeah, no kidding. Speaking of making progress, we've been pretty good with No Holds Barred, you and I.
Like, we have. We committed to monthly, and we've done like 50 of them in a year and a half.
Right now, we're breaking down the wrestler of each month. So who was the best wrestler in the month of May all time? You know the months. I don't need to go through them. So we're doing that. We're doing live watches. And we got another little thing up our sleeve that we'll be dropping soon. And you'll hear more about that.
Excited about it.
As it comes. That's on Saturdays on North South. And that runs with either JT's Mailbag, where you're just taking questions left and right, right?
That's all I do.
Yeah. You're talking baseball. You're talking network TV. Anything is up for grabs in these mailbags.
Yes.
Nice. And that runs
anything.
Anything. And that runs also with from Squared Circle to Silver Screen. That's Logan and the Cowboy talking movies, either starring wrestlers or about wrestlers. What was their last episode?
The Scorpion King.
The Scorpion King. And
well, actually, by the time this drops, their newest one should be out as well. So, but the previous one was Scorpion King.
Right, Scorpion King, which is an incredibly important film.
Yes.
I mean, it did win any awards, but it stole the greatest wrestler potentially of all time from the WWF.
Uh-huh.
And then finally on Sundays, Mark Claire, Remzo Martinez, Second Print Comics, just deep dives into some really great comic stories. These guys got great chemistry. They're a lot of fun to listen to. Don't leave out Jordan Duncan, Rank and File, who it's a tournament-based show, ranking things. Everything's about ranking on this.
And, that's all we do.
Yeah, and Viewer's Choice. Marcus and Tim, after every major show, they get on the internet right away. They put out some content for you. They break it down. It's not a 3-hour fest where they complain about everything. High points, low points, they're out. It's a great recap if you missed the pay-per-view. Definitely give them a chance.
All right. Nice job.
And while I'm here, throw some love to the Jenny position. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Smith. She's great. She's on a bunch of shows with us, and we love Jenny, so give her some love. And throw some love to the Place to Be Wrestling Network, the Place to Be Pop Feed, all of our friends. It's been, you know, we've built, well, you and Scott really, but like the community that's been built is a great thing, and it's one of the main reasons why I'm still a wrestling fan. So, you know, if you got time, throw some love.
Yeah, I love everyone being so dedicated and thriving with like all this audio content across the board, like on all the feeds. It's just crazy amounts of content being pumped out. And everyone's like super into it and dedicated. And, you know, I joke sometimes with Chad, I call it like a PTV, the new class, right? Like some of these guys that are around now,
right.
But the camaraderie, like you see between them all, have really built up nicely. Like they all just feed off each other. So it's cool. And Jenny is looking for, potential new hosts and shows at Jenny position. So if you're interested in doing a show, anything like pop culture related or anything like that, she's looking for tryouts. So just reach out to me or to her and we can get you set up on that.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think that plug was just as long as our next appearance.
Sorry. I want to make sure I get everybody because I genuinely like everybody and I like the shows. So.
Me too.
1995. What the hell is the TK on Shawn Michaels' gloves?
Me and my friend Jim debated that for years, and I think it was like his girlfriend at the time's initials, I believe.
Is it Tawny Katain?
Yes. You nailed it.
Or was it Tony Khan?
I was wondering if it was like the Click. You know, for a while, but the backstage Click was C, and he hadn't named like the fans of Click yet with the K. So,
right.
But I think I ended up reading eventually it was like his girlfriend. She was like the seamstress or something for the band. But no, like it was a bit the backstage. She worked backstage or something like that. So
he comes in number one, and until Edge won this year, he's the only person who ever won from number one, right?
Yes, because Ray was number two.
Yeah.
Flair was three.
Yeah, and
oh, Benoit.
No, he's the only one.
He doesn't exist.
Yeah, right. I love when they used to be like, only two people have won from number one. And one of them is Shawn Michaels.
One person, one monster have won for number one.
So he's look, this is his, I mean, this is the biggest chance they take on him, right?
Yes.
Letting him run this half hour match.
Yeah, I think ABBA wrote the song, Take a Chance on Me.
Don't take a chance, take a chance. Yeah, so I have mixed feelings about this match. Mixed feelings indeed. I do really like the energy at the start when it's him and Bulldog. I think he does a great job bouncing absolutely everywhere for the British Bulldog.
Yes.
And any time that they're together, I think the match moves away and moves very well. Right?
Yep.
It's all the other times that I struggle with a little bit here.
And it was known he was number one, and he like embraces it. He's like the first guy to embrace, you know, he's like not like Flair kind of does, but he really owns being number one. He talks right. It up leading up to it. He's like ready to dominate the match.
Yeah.
And it's a year after that breakout in 94 we covered. And he's the kind of, the, you know, he's pretty much the favorite. Like he's on the verge of being the top dog. I think this one's almost forgotten with how you always think like 96 is pretty obvious, 98 with Austin, like right, Hogan in 91. Like there's always ones where you kind of know it's the guy's Rumble. And this one I feel like almost gets forgotten a bit, that like it was pretty known that Shawn was going to win this. Like especially when you look at the field, it was very unlikely anyone else was going to win this match. And but he doesn't work that way. He works like a guy that needs to prove himself still. His confidence, his arrogance at an all-time high, and he vows to go all the way. And yes, he's very aggressive with abandon, and Bulldog uses power offense. And I thought Shawn actually wrestled a little risky here, showing that confidence. He scales the ropes. He's flying at Bulldog. He bumps and feeds for Duke Josie. But he's like really out to put on a show.
Yeah, I just think that it very much is a one-man show. Because yeah. And I don't even know if it's his fault, right? But like he has to sell for Eli Blue. He has to sell for the dumpster. He almost gets tossed off some punches from Jimmy Del Rey. Like, and I love that Sione comes in and almost kills him. Is that revenge from WrestleMania 7, do you think?
No, it's revenge from them beating the head shrinkers for the tag titles.
Oh, yes, that's right. But he just, he keeps going back to Duke the Dumpster Drosy.
It's his Bob Holly of this year.
Right. But he's not, Drosy's not as good as Bob Holly.
Right. He gets into a lot of near eliminations right away. He's pinballing for the big guys. All the attention of this match is completely on him. He barely survives that Sione press slam, like you said.
Yeah.
Sells for Drosy like he's Hulk Hogan. Like, he makes it look like a fucking threat. And then he ends up with Bulldog on and off. A fun through line. And then he finally ends Drosy's reign of terror by eliminating him. So that was good.
Is there a weirder pairing in the history of wrestling than watching Shawn Michaels fight King Kong Bundy?
Yes, it is odd. Doesn't seem like two guys that should have crossed paths for sure.
Yeah, like, and it's like, how can he be holding his own against this guy?
Right. Yeah, I mean, he's cleaning house too, like racking up bodies as we thin out, and then we get a good midpoint tussle where it's just him and Bulldog. They clean up house, and you know they were together in the beginning. Now they're together in the middle alone. Mm-hmm. Jacob Blue comes in, Shawn just ducks and throws him out right away as he owns the match. And then, yeah, he's pinballing like he's born to do for Bundy, flying around. He works with Bulldog against Bundy, which was cool. Like, they kind of had to come together for a minute. Luger comes in. He just knifes through Shawn, and Shawn's, like, flying over for him for the second year in a row.
I would have really gone for a Lex Luger-Shawn Michaels feud.
Yeah, we never really got one like that.
It's too bad. Like, Luger gets kind of a bad rap for his WWF run, but, like, he doesn't really fight. Does he fight anybody really good the whole time he's there?
Yeah, and I mean, depends your thoughts on Yoko, I guess. But they do have a fun match at SummerSlam.
Yeah, I like it. I just don't. I don't think you're getting. You're not getting the best of Lex Luger when he's fighting Yokozuna. Like, and
no, and we didn't really get the Brett match with Narcissist, you know?
Yeah.
Because he turns right after that. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I don't think he ever really got, like, that showcase match chance.
Yeah, like, he could have done Brett. He could have done Sean. He could have done even Davey. Like,
yeah.
I guess Perfect is probably the...
Yeah, and even that doesn't really end up clicking, but...
Yeah, it's fine, but... Yeah.
It's a weird run. Sean just gives to everyone here. He's feeding for Aldo, Mantar. Like he's bumping for everyone.
Dickie Murdoch.
Just everyone. He spends the backstretch of the match in the corner, absorbing some offense. He keeps going back to Bulldog. And Vince is really hyping up Sean still being there.
Yeah.
He pounds on Hank Godwin. You get the fun sequence of Murdoch where Dick almost tosses him, which was kind of cool for Sean, knowing he's a historian. You know, a couple years ago, we talked about him getting in there with Flair. Now he's in there with Dick Murdoch. He throws out Aldo. And he replicates 94 at the end. He dives at Luger, which is like a cool callback, just like he did in 94 at Brett. This time he stays alive. And we get a real long post 30, which I didn't remember this long of a post, like, end of the entrance.
Yeah.
You get Sean, like, lots of shine. He dumps Luger, which is a pretty big elimination for his chances.
Oh, yeah.
Then, right? I mean, like, tossing him pretty much, that's it, you know, in a way. He wants an alliance of Crush. They focus on Bulldog, but Crush turns on him. Sean survives. Sean survives Bulldog. He gets crushed on the top. He barely hangs on. And then, of course, you get one of the most repeated clips of all time. An all-time classic ending. Iconic. It's memorable. Perfectly done with the one foot. The camera work is amazing, too, where they cut away from him.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see the one foot. He just, like, pops back in the frame and dumps Bulldog from behind. Even get Bulldog's music.
Yeah, the music is such a great touch.
Yes. Yes, because everyone just assumes it's over. You only kind of see Sean hanging in the background barely as he's celebrating. It is a super athletic spot, like, to pull off. Like, it's a lot of faith to wrestle 40 minutes and then have the trust that you could hang like that, bounce on one foot, and come back in. It's super well done. And Sean gets his crowning moment, solidifies himself as one of the top stars in the promotion. Very strong showing. He's presented as a big-time star, a ton of camera time. He's always in the mix. Own the ring, a lot of creative spots with the bumping. Like, this is the Shawn Michaels Rumble. The only detraction you can take is that it's less than an hour.
I got a couple of detractions. And
nope, I said the only one.
Oh, okay, I'll shut up then. I think, despite the fact that he's constantly hanging on, and again, this is not his fault, but I think it does weigh a bit against him. Despite the fact that he's constantly hanging on, I don't believe for one second that these guys are going to throw him out.
Yeah, I mean, not his fault, I guess, but but he does, he like helps put them over though, which is always cool.
And the other thing I will say is that there's a lot of near eliminations, but I think Sean's going through the motions on them.
You think so?
Yeah, and we'll talk about it as we go further, but like we'll talk about it in the next year for sure, right? But like watch, I mean, if anybody wants to go back, watch when someone's got him in the corner and they're lifting him up in 95 versus 96. So in 95, he's just letting himself get lifted up and then drop back down. In 96, he's constantly punching. Like, there's always something. It looks like he's fighting to stay in the match. Whereas in this one, because I was expecting to rate this one much higher than I did in work rate. But as I was watching it, I didn't think it was a great – it didn't feel like a great, great, great performance. It felt good. It felt lethargic on a lot of the near falls. Like, it felt like he was really just walking through the motions and waiting till the end where he'd pump back up and fight Davey. And so, like, I have a section in my notes where I'm just talking about memorable spots. And the only one I have for the match is the near elimination at the end.
This
is where I'm struggling with him a little bit here, because again, I don't think it's a bad performance. I think he completely carries the match, and I think that's, I mean, he's in there 38 minutes. He's the Iron Man. He eliminates the most guys with 8. He wins, but I think because the field is so weak, and because none of them have a hope in winning, it strips the urgency from the match, and I think he feels it too.
Maybe. I still enjoyed him. I don't know.
Look, I still have him high. Look, I have him at a 6 for presentation. I don't think he's quite there yet, but they're presenting him better than they have before.
I went with a 7.
Yeah,
and I mean, he's like the top dog in a way, and this kind of bleeds into the Mania build with some of the issues in that match, is that, like, to me, he's almost presented as, like, even above Diesel at times.
Yeah, I guess, again, it's not really his fault, but, like, he's the top dog in this match of losers.
Right, like, but that's just the roster he's got. I mean, what's he going to do?
Right, but I think that, I don't think it's his fault, but I think it's not like he's being presented as the top dog. I mean, look, you'll see it next year, but, like, not like he's being presented as the top dog in 1990 with real stars in the ring, right?
Yeah, I guess I just figured he would have, you know, at this point, like...
Yeah,
and this is the construct of the match. Yeah, like, guys like Owen, Backlund, Brett, like, that is not there, really. So all the top dogs, and he's just kind of left with it. But I think even with other guys at this point, he would have come across that way, because that's how he was being built and presented. Like, the Raws leading up to this, like, he feels like a star.
Oh, yeah, he's a star. I have him as 6, which is higher than almost everybody not named Ultimate Warrior or Andre the Giant up until this point, uh-huh. Right? So I think he's high up there. It's just, for me, it's just not quite there. And work rate's where I'm digging him. I'm at a 4 on work rate.
Yeah, so I went much higher on work rate. I gave it a 7. Again, like, I think his pinballing is moving around. The spot at the end is like an all-timer. Anytime he's with Bulldog is really good. The dive at Luger, again, was fun. A memorable callback to 94. All the eliminations. Yeah, I don't know. I thought he worked hard. And I think he went in there, even though he knew he was going to win, and, like, with something to prove yet again, yeah, to everyone.
Yeah, I just wanted that more drama. And effectiveness, though, I think it's I'm at a 6. I think he did a great job. He came out stronger than he went in. It was memorable, so.
7 for me there.
That gives him a total of 37, which seeds him at number 5 all-time as a Royal Rumble performance. So as we stand right now, of the top 6 Royal Rumble performances, 3 of them are Shawn Michaels.
Was this one of our biggest splits? 5? That's a pretty big gap for us. 21 for me, 16 for you.
Maybe.
It's got to be one of the, if not the...
Well, 18 biggest. And... Andre in 1990.
Oh, yeah, 18 and 10. Yeah, okay.
And Andre... I don't know, I'm pretty high on Andre there. Yeah, that's... Maybe it's our biggest split so far, yeah. Well, let's see if the split continues as we go into 1996. So here... For me, he's the unquestioned number one guy.
Yes. I mean, it's clear he's headed to WrestleMania to fight Bret Hart. They all but say it, like, before the fucking match. Like, you know, it's like Diesel's, like, pretty much his only real threat in this match.
Yeah. That's right. And I love, too, that, like, he comes in at 18, and his energy's great. He's fighting everyone. He's fighting Savio. He's fighting the kid. Mm-hmm. He's fighting Hunter, right? And only gentle punches with Owen Hart, which is surprising considering what their feud.
Right, their feud. His huge pop when he comes out, too.
Massive.
And, like, Vince is all over it, like, just hyping the shit out of him.
All right! It's a lot of that, right? Like,
yeah, this is prime Vince Shawn stretch here. And I did like that he went right at the click guy, so that was a nice touch. That he goes a kid and Hunter. Perfect says there's too much beef for Shawn to deal with in the match. Shawn strikes big time right away, though. He dumps Yoko and Vader at the same time, which is a game-changer spot for him. I mean, those are, like, two massive threats, and he eliminates them both, which is a really cool moment. He then military press slams Kid to the floor, another wild bump, just a red-hot start. And then you get the infamous stuff where Vader comes in and just murders him, press slams him to the floor. And maybe you think right away that Shawn's out, right? Because we've seen guys get thrown out like this before. Even though other guys were in the match, if they go over the top, they're out. But Vince says it right away, pretty much. Like, oh, he's not eliminated. But it's a good way to slow him down a little bit without having others ding him up.
Yeah, and it also like subtly starts their feud for later in the year.
Yes.
And it is weird that none of it counts when Vader does it. Like, they're kind of like all over the place with those rules every now and then.
Yeah. It's year to year. It ebbs and flows.
Yeah. I love, too, that he trades blows with Hakushi in a dream match that we never really get. Another one.
Yeah. And then he goes back and throws Cornette out of the ring, which is kind of a fun revenge spot. And he's been having this war. You know, it's almost a year-long war with Cornette and his camp. He goes right to the teases. He's almost thrown out by Hunter and his old friend Bob Holly. Back at it. a lot of time with Hunter, honestly. Gets kind of pushed through the ropes. He walks around. He's definitely more deliberate this year. He's working hard, but he's also more deliberate. And then we get the bit where he reveals that Jerry the King Lawler is hiding under the ring. So Lawler pulls him out, and he does some of his comedy stuff, which is a big, as you hear Chronicle the Wrestling War Zone, it's a big Sean trope in this 95-96 face run. He does a lot of, like, kind of sticky comedy early in his matches.
Right.
And that's what we get here with him and King. And then they get back in the ring, and he dumps him out right away.
I don't mind it, like, because it's super memorable, like, in this match. Like, especially, like, no one – I think it's more memorable for Lawler because no one's ever done that before, hit under the ring, and it was a thing. But obviously it had to be Michaels who went and took him out and threw him out.
Yeah, yeah, it was a perfect choice to go with that.
It's the Hogan. It's the Hogan spot, basically.
Right, yes. Yeah, so he would have done that to Jimmy Hart or something. So
yeah.
The mood changes when Diesel comes out, though, and it's kind of a stake in the ground. He nails Sean right away, right, kind of establishing every man for himself.
Mm-hmm.
Sean comes back, and he goes after Bob Holly to feel good again. It's kind of his go-to. And perfect wonder is he healthy? Is it the concussions? What's going on? Has a fun slugfest with Kama, takes some hard punches. And there's a lot of hanging on from here. But I do think what hurt a little bit was the flat crowd and the vibe.
Mm.
This is why I thought 95 actually did feel at times more dramatic, because this is such a more flat crowd. The drama is not there as much when he's near elimination.
See, I feel that while the crowd wasn't helping his near eliminations, I felt that he was fighting more on his near eliminations. And
oh, sure. It just feels like less, like, I don't know, like, the crowd's just kind of checked out on it more. This crowd sucks. We talked a lot about it on that episode of Wrestling Warzone Chat, and I did. We recapped the 96 Rumble. It's kind of like an overlooked worst crowd ever right. for a big pay-per-view. They're not good.
Yeah, I just think that this one, is, more so than 95, is a foregone conclusion. Not that 95 wasn't, but this one's, I think, is more. And I think I don't know if he knew this, but it felt like he added more urgency to the performance. That's how
He's also a face here versus 95, too, which is a little bit different.
Yeah, he's doing a lot more character stuff, too, which I think helps the match. I also think he's got a really little underrated segment with Austin in this match.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his sell on Austin's jumping clothesline, he sells it like death, right?
Yes.
And something – this is what the feeling I get when I watch their 97 King of the Ring match. It's like these two are just so fast together.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a really great it's a really great combo, and I like that he's I think too that they're getting a bit more creative in this match with the near eliminations. Like he almost gets suplexed out by Owen Hart, and then he ends up on the apron with him. Everybody's screaming, gets the kick of death from Owen, and I think we talked about it earlier, but I think the feud between Jannetty and him has calmed down because Jannetty hits the ring and they don't immediately start punching each other.
Yes, it's cooled a little bit.
Yeah.
He does go ahead with Barry Horowitz, though. He feeds for him. Always kind of giving in these. He's a very selfless guy in these Rumbles. The battle against Rosa Owen was good with that feud still going. Takes the Enziguri to play that up, of course. He's out cold for a minute. But again, the crowd is not really even reacting to that moment. Diesel saves him, and then Sean pitches Owen to get his revenge. And then he gets that awesome Austin clothesline, which is a big bump. We do get the throwdown a little bit with Marty and Sean. Bulldog and Sean spill outside. It's like another through line from last year. Bulldog and Sean tied up. Owen comes back out and they beat up Sean. Just to add a little bit of doubt, I think they did that, right?
Yeah.
And then Diesel keeps saving Sean, which I thought, you know, does that make him look a little weak at times? I don't know. Like Diesel constantly saving him in this match. And then Sean eliminates Bulldog and then super kicks Diesel for the win.
Yeah.
What did you think, though, of Diesel saving him a bunch?
It didn't bother me so much because earlier in the match, Sean saved him from Kama.
Yeah.
Like so
it's established. I mean, they're obviously working together, so.
Yeah. But what I did love is that on the elimination of Diesel, I think Sean knew he had to take him out fast.
Right.
So like there was urgency here. Like it's like he slides under Bulldog's, which I think is actually a really cool elimination on Davey too. Mm-hmm. Slides under Bulldog, tosses him out, and then you see him like, okay, I gotta get him out, and kicks him right. Like Diesel has no time to even react almost. And I think that's a nice spot because we didn't need to see them go back and forth. And I think it would have hurt Sean to go back and forth with Diesel here a bit.
No, I agree. It was good to just take him out and move on. So, I mean, it was another Rumble where Sean's the show. He took out a lot of heavy hitters this time. But again, to me, wasn't as dramatic because of the crowd. But still a very good showing. The Rumble's synonymous with him. Good through lines with Vader, Owen, Diesel. And he solidified as a top guy. I mean, he's ready to ascend to the top. So
yeah,
it's obviously a pretty, you know, memorable outing for him.
Yeah. So once again, he's in there 26 minutes and 9 seconds, which is longer than you think coming in at 18. He's got the most eliminations at 8. So it's the second year in a row he tosses the most guys. To me, this is the closest. I mean, I guess it's the closest he feels. He's the biggest star he'll ever be here, I think. That's why I have him a presentation at 8.
Yeah, I have him at 8 too. I mean, the promotion in 96 is built on his back. 97, you could argue, he's maybe a little bit bigger, but at the nonetheless, he's about to be the top wrestler in the biggest promotion in the world.
Yeah. Work rate, I'm at a 6. I think he was excellent.
Yep, same.
And 6 seems to be my top out for Michaels in these early years. And in effectiveness, I've got 7. He won the thing. He had the most eliminations. He got more over. He was interesting.
Yeah, no, it's hard to argue. So.
Yeah. And that lands him as this 1996 run as the number one Royal Rumble performance of all time.
Which is crazy because the Rumble match itself is not that good.
No.
But he's great in it, so.
Yeah, like I just.
I mean, I had this tied with 95.
Yeah, and I had it 5 points higher.
Yes. So, I mean, I thought he was equally as good in both of them, but.
Yeah, I just, there's something missing for me in 95. I think that's the worst Royal Rumble of all time, 1995. Maybe that's what's playing into it.
Yeah, well, this isn't that far off, honestly.
Right. All right. Well, listen, that's where we're stopping on Shawn Michaels tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go any further, do you want to run down our top 10 Royal Rumble performances of all time?
Yeah, but Aaron, I think we finally took the bait and made the switch. Do you want to explain our new methodology?
Yeah, sure. So we'll do the performances, but after we're going to rate the performance because, you know, we're working on averages, right? And that gave us, you know, I mean, Danny Davis wasn't leaving our top 10. Don Morocco was perpetually number 7. And so what we came up with as a working thing for now is to keep going with the averages, but you have to pass a certain threshold of matches to qualify. And the number we batted around and came to was 3. So if you're in 3 Royal Rumbles, you can qualify to be the greatest Royal Rumble performer of all time. And then it's just based on your average from all of the match ratings.
Yeah.
And I mean, let us know if this doesn't work for you. But then when we read our top 10 later, I think to me it makes a lot more sense than our top 10 did before.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, but let's go through the performances. You want to start us off with number 10?
I sure do. Number 10 will be Jim Duggan in 1988.
Number 9, Jake the Snake Roberts, 1992.
Number 8, Andre the Giant, 1990.
Number 7, Bret the Hitman Hart from 1997.
Number 6, Shawn Michaels, 1994.
Number 5, Shawn Michaels from 1995.
Number 4, Andre the Giant, 1989.
Number 3, Bret Hart, 1994.
Number 2, The Ultimate Warrior, 1990.
And as of now, the number 1 performance, Shawn Michaels from 1996.
Okay.
I think Shawn Michaels is going to do some damage to Bret Hart on this list.
Yeah, fitting, but yes. He's kind of usurped. Bret was kind of our Mr. Rumble to this point. But.
Yeah, he's kind of pushing past. Because we're doing a whole other episode on the rest of Shawn, Shawn's not going to qualify yet for the performer. We're going to deal with that at the end of the next episode. But as the top 10 stands right now, we actually only have 10. Of all the guys we've talked about, only 10 guys have been in 3 Royal Rumbles each.
Okay.
So our number 10 guy, Dino Bravo, last place.
Number 9, Tito Santana.
Number 8, Smash/Repo Man.
Number 7, Jim the Animal Neidhart.
Number 6, One Man Gang, Akeem.
Number 5, Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Number 4, Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Number 3, Jake Roberts.
Number 2, Mr. Perfect.
And for now, number 1, Bret the Hitman Hart.
Yeah, and I think that makes more sense. Because, like, look, in our other top 10, number 1 was Andre. We had Axe, Don Morocco, and Danny Davis also in the top 10.
So. Right. No, this makes more sense.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, we'll play around with the number. Maybe if we see there's still something off, we might up it to 4 times or whatever. But I think for now, this is a decent solution.
Mm-hmm.
We've been begging for people to help us with math, but only one person stepped up.
Only one. You.
Oh, well, no. Mariqua. Mariqua helped us, no?
He did. Yeah. He did. He helped greatly. He's one of our top fans. He's the man.
Trying to throw him some love. All right, we'll see you again in 2 weeks.
Keep on rumbling.